Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hillam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and in anticipation of a forthcoming movie episode, which, yes, we're already at another movie episode, they just come fast and furious, and that's not what it is. We decided that we would look back at something that always gives us some joy whenever we cover it, which is the Animaniacs. But we're not just going to do our usual shtick of covering two random Animaniacs episodes. No, we are going to do what a lot of you guys have been doing, but not with Animaniacs, but with other shows, is we're going to compare it to the 2020 reboot.
Yes, so the episodes we are covering today are from the 1990s Animaniacs series, Ragamuffins, followed by Woodstock Slappy, one of my favorites. And from the 2020s Animaniacs revival, we're covering Season 3, Episode 4, which is Weeper Nachtmare, followed by Mad Mouse Furry Road.
We thought that, you know, it'd be cool to just, you know, do a compare contrast, because these are two, like, it's easy to say, like, oh yeah, these are just two cut from the same cloth kind of things, but, like, the later Animaniacs had different writers, different animation, different mentalities, different corporate mentalities, and was less of an Amblin thing. And I think a lot of people online don't like that as much. And so we're going to at least be critical, but not like that critical.
We're going to be fair and equal with our criticisms of both episodes. But I love to say, I had some complaints about the 2020s one.
Same. But, like, I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, this is awful. Oh, there's no comparison.
I'm going to rob the whole goddamn show because of it. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is all shit. It's like, no, it just, I don't know. I think the worst thing you can say about the 2020s Animaniacs is that it's a little bit uneven.
Yes, that and that it is. It is. It's very uneven. I mean, the Hulu manufacturing assembly line shit is not as prone to success as the original Amblin ones, and because the world is not what it was in 1991 or whatever, or 1994, which is when the first one of these aired. So, shall I get into mine?
Sure.
All right. The one we have here is episode 59 of the original run, which is called, let me just make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, Ragamuffins, not Rugamuffins or Runamarink or any of the other things Mark thought it was.
Flashback.
From the 1990s Animaniacs series, it's Runamarink with Woodstock Slappy.
Wait. Mark, what was the word you just did?
Yes.
Runamarink? What?
That's not the title, is it?
It's Ragamuffins.
Ranmuffins.
No, not Bran Muffin. Okay, Mark, we're gonna do... Okay, just repeat. No, compose yourself. Just repeat at. No. Repeat after me. Ragamuffins.
Okay. Ragamuffins.
You see, there you go. It's not so hard. Okay, I don't know what the fuck Runamarink is.
Alright. I'll do it again then. So, the episodes we're going to be covering are from the 90s.
We're going to be serving fucking breakfast.
Alright.
End of flashback.
And Woodstock Slappy. It was released on March 1st, 1994. Alright.
Okay.
We have a pretty big on this day.
Oh.
Yeah. A pretty big birthday, actually. Yeah, I should have said that. No, it's someone who was born on this
day.
Mark. If I were to ask you to give me the name of the epitome of vapid, unnecessary pop music from circa 2010 until, I suppose, now, what would you come up with?
Unnecessary pop music.
Just shit pop.
Male or female?
Male.
Canadian or American?
Canadian. I think you got it.
Bieber.
Yeah, Justin Bieber was born on this day, March 1st, 1994.
Oh, shit. Oh shit!
I knew it was gonna be one you were gonna get. I even like the second. It's because it's the easiest one, you know.
I gotta admit, he was first looking in my head. I just wanted to confirm it.
Yeah, yes. No. I knew you were gonna get it. Justin Bieber, yeah. And look, I in this episode especially, I'm gonna add my fair share of opinions on the history of music. But what I will say. It is very funny that Justin Bieber was born on the day of an episode of Animaniacs, really giving a fair tribute to the music of the subculture. But there are one or two Bieber songs that are actually good. Yes, really. I am fine with. I don't think this is that spicy. I think his best album is Purpose. I think his best singles come from that album. I think that's the closest to actual music that I like. He hasn't done anything. That was the album with What Do You Mean and Sorry and Love Yourself, Mark. Oh. So you don't have to Google it. I'm sorry.
You know what? Yes, actually. Yeah, that is probably his best work.
Yeah, it is.
In fact, I heard the original songwriter perform Love Yourself in concert.
Yeah, it sounds like an Ed Sheeran song.
Because it is an Ed Sheeran song.
Yeah, that's probably why I like it so much.
Same.
You know?
When that song... No, seriously... When it's all first came on the radio, I'm like, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Why do I like it so much? Oh, that explains it. Okay. Yeah.
It's because an actual good songwriter wrote it. So, yeah. But yeah, Justin Bieber born on this day. I'll do my usual top 40 number one song in the US UK thing. It's some pretty 90s ones here. The number one in the US was The Power of Love by Celine Dion. Or Celine Dion, for people who aren't Canadian. Matter of fact, Canada is a theme through all of the On This Day things that I have. Because we have Bieber, we have Celine Dion, and the number one, that was number one in the US, the number one in the UK was Mariah Carey's cover of Nielsen's Without You, and I'm giving the advantage to the UK.
And the number one song in Canada was Wah by Justin Bieber.
Okay. That is a great joke. That is a wonderful joke, right, and I love the
internet. Thank you.
Continuing the Canada theme here, some of the movies you could see in theaters include Fox's Blank Check, On Deadly Ground with Steven Seagal, and the first Ace Ventura.
Oh!
So some more Canada for you.
Wow.
Yeah, so the first Ace Ventura, not the racist one, the transphobic one. There's a difference.
Yes.
Yeah. But look, if you want a Jim Carrey movie that's aged well, wait like 11 episodes. What's very interesting about this episode of Animaniacs is that it is the last time that it would have water tower Bridgers. Because that was a big thing you needed to establish in the early run of the series where... Oh, yes, the Animaniacs are these things that are locked in the Acme Water Tower. And every so often, they get to come out and wreak havoc around the studio. And then at the end of the episode, they have to go back in the tower again. And after a certain point, after, 60 episodes, you really didn't have to establish it that much. And also, they included those because some episodes went short, and they had to put those in. This one, because it had a shorter Warner's cartoon and a shorter Slappy and Skippy cartoon, they were like, all right, let's just throw in some Bridgers and head up the runtime now. And so that's why this has some tower Bridgers. And they're pretty good in this one. I mean, the opening is...
they're cute.
Exactly. They're very cute. The opening is them getting a condor over and then riding it down and going into the studio proper. And it's fine. We go into Ragamuffins. Tom Minson wrote it, and it was directed by Barry Caldwell and John McClanahan. I really like the conceit of this cartoon, which is... Because the whole thing is that, you know, the Warners have been... You know, part of the Warner Brothers lore for 80-odd years. They've been making cartoons since they started at the studio. Here is a cartoon of theirs from 1929. And I love that they did this because we see little glimpses of it in The Warner's anniversary special, where you get to see clips of their cartoons over the years. And I love all the fun they had with the different eras of animation in that. I have to do research. I forget if they did more of these, because this is a really cool idea for this. Just like a pastiche on like 20s or 30s animation.
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times they did this, but this is the most prevalent one. And may I just say, Jordan, what I love most about the show, the Animaniacs,
yeah,
is the voice talent. I love Rob Coulson and Jess Harnell and Tristan McNeil. Just how great zingers written by Sherry Stoner and Ruger and all of them. Yeah. So, what's this episode about?
This is an episode that does not utilize any dialogue, because this is from the early parts of animation, where it was before modern voice acting, because before you could really handle audio in film. And so this is an entirely silent cartoon, which is a really good challenge for this animation unit, because obviously they're used to writing Marx Brothers gags and doing dialogue-based things. Obviously, the Pinky and the Brain thrive off of that. And so this is like, okay, we're going to do a cartoon with these characters where they can't say anything. And so that's why a lot of this cartoon goes for stylization in the first couple of minutes more than anything else. Because the whole premise of this cartoon, of Ragamuffins, is the Warners want food. It's that simple. They want something to eat. And they keep getting thrown out of this bakery that has all these sweets and all these pastries they want to eat. Because the main chef there and the boss there is very selective on who gets to eat them, because they don't have any money. And so they decide, well, the best way to get the food is to work there and to get a job at this bakery and then get as many free samples as they want. But as we find out, the chef has this strict no eating on the job rule, which is honestly, it makes them a wonderful foil for them. So all of the action in this is conveyed not through dialogue, but for visual gags. And I will say they're good at visual gags, so it didn't worry me that much. They were going on without dialogue. But yeah, the first couple minutes of this was just establishing all the things about story and things. They're like, all right, you know, they have to go through the back door and find this bakery. And I will say the first gag I really loved in this was when they're waiting outside trying to figure out how to get into the bakery. And it says, you know, you got to have a uniform or else you're going to be kicked out, or supply your own uniform. Yakko pulls a bag of paint out of Wacko's shirt and paints uniforms on all three of them. And then as the head chef thinks about whether the uniform three are really the Warners, Yakko comes in and just eats the thought out of his head. I love that. This is also, I mean, focusing less on the dialogue gives you more opportunities to really showcase the animation. And it's all in black and white as well. So you get like possibly the best animation on this is just the pan over of the conveyor of bakery items the Warners pass by. And you just see like all these processes in motion. And, you know, as the head chef puts them to work and you give them various things to do. Like, I love that, like, as he gives them directions, I think Yakko gives him a random drawing of his ass that he just whipped up on the spot.
I love that. Just this big grotesque ass on the guy. It's like,
no, but I love that. And yeah, no, it gets into a really nice structure where the chef gives each of them something to do. Insists they can't eat any of the samples. They have to, you know, make them all. And then shenanigans ensue. So the first one is Yakko is making these little pecan muffins. And for the record, and I don't know if this is a really contentious subject here, it's pronounced pecan, not pecan. You know, there's probably going to be people down south that go, what? But
Jordan, is this the episode where you're going to correct everybody's grammar?
Yes, I am.
You were saying the wrong title, you correct the pecan shit.
Well, I think you'll find that saying the wrong title is not grammatical. It's just saying the wrong thing. No. It's. I bring that because a friend of mine who I went to college with, a couple of my friends actually, had a years-long battle about the pronunciation of the word pecan. And my friend Tabby was very convinced that it was pecan. And my friend Ed was just like giving empirical evidence of the contrary, right down to the official pronunciation where it's literally pecan. And Tabby's like, I'm not going to listen to you. It's pecan. And I had to mediate these. Like, I had to be in the middle going like, look, you're both right, but it's pecan. And to this day, this is my friend that's down in Florida. To this day, she's just like living in her own, like, I mean, the thing about America is that you can be either, you know, they're not going to, but it's pronounced pecan. just is.
Jordan, I didn't know you went to college in the Seinfeld universe.
I mean, I will say that one of my earliest memories in college was I had a friend that was big in the my college campus's Hillel, which had its own lounge. And what we would do is he had the key there, and we would go in there, and we would just sit in the Hillel lounge and watch Seinfeld reruns. Like, there was nothing illegal about it.
What do you mean? It's pronounced because.
Here is the definition.
Oh, Jerry.
All right.
Right there in the dictionary.
Let there be no. It's a Frank Costanza thing. Let there be no doubt in your mind it's pronounced pecan. None of this pecan nonsense, none of it. You go in there, you pronounce it correctly. Now what's the word again? Pecan. No, it's not. So. Frank Costanza. Perfect. Anyway, he's putting the little the pecans on the muffins, and I love the timing of the chef stopping Yakko from popping a bunch of the pecans in his mouth and pulling down a no eating sign. And then of course they find their ways to exploit this and make it backfire, and a lot of it ends up it's just like, okay, trying to eat something and before it even gets down the throat having to put it back on the food, which is they're not focusing on the disgusting quality of it, thankfully, although maybe the later version of it would. But yeah, each of them have their own version of this, where, you know, Wacko has these sort of cream topped cupcakes and muffins and things, and I like him shooting the cream topping into his mouth the second the chef leaves is an easy gag, but I laughed at it as well as the chef's panicked reaction when he looks back. That's good. The single most impressive gag in this cartoon to me is the gag with Dot's tongue.
Oh, I love this.
It's so good because it's the kind of thing where, like she's trying to, like, what's she doing again? She's making cookies, and she's got to do a little smiley face on all the cookies and icing. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, she can't have any of the cookies for herself. And so as she's about to literally just, like, you know, get one with her tongue, he comes in and literally drags her away. And her tongue just keeps stretching out and ends up like a whole sword duel with her tongue. It's just more and more exaggerated as it goes. And it's wonderful.
Wonderful gag work.
Oh, the gag work. At this point in the cartoon, it just becomes incredible because it's just like all
quick. Yeah, it really starts hitting around this point in the cartoon. And the one issue I had, frankly, is that I feel we spent a little bit too much time. Because it's rather repetitive at the beginning. It's very much like, now remember, don't eat this.
Okay,
I said don't eat it.
Yeah.
Cut to the next character. Don't eat it. It's very repetitive at the beginning, so we do get to this tongue sequence. That's when the cartoon really comes alive for me.
Yeah. And then I think the sequence after that is more interesting than funny, at least for plot reasons, because they have a break time and they spend the entire break scrounging up the money to afford something in the candy machine. And the second they're about to eat it, the boss pulls them out of break and then eats the candy bar himself, which, again, cements him as the villain of this piece.
Which, can I say, ain't that the truth? I cannot tell you how many times that I've gone on my lunch break and, like I'm just about to get comfortable, I'm just about to really dig into my lunch, then it's like, oh, by the way, you have 5 minutes left. Like, shit.
My old job, like, I tried to schedule my lunch around my boss's shenanigans, and every time it would end up being, like, so badly timed, I'd have to like be eating my lunch while my boss went on about various things. I'm like,
yeah,
it's tough, but yeah, no, it's very relatable. It's aged very well. From here, the gags just fly fast. Like there's a bit where they literally just like put a bunch of icing down the chef's pants, and it just sort of like goes like they splash plaster his face with it, and gets a little frame and a medal that says "Best Use of
Best
Icing."
Use
I
of
love
icing.
That.
And fantastic.
He shoots some at the Warners, and they all get little Marx Brothers facial hair and things on them. They milk that a little too far, but yeah. I think the most classic Looney Tunes gag here is the little Toreador gag where Wacko throws out a little bullfighter's red thing, And because the chef is a bull, and so they're able to like direct him that way. And it's similar to a gag from Bully for Bugs, except instead of a fire hydrant knocking into him, like he goes down a chute into a pastry maker, and we get all these sort of Rube Goldbergian processes of him getting flung through ovens and made into cookies and pies and cakes and things, and it's really interesting.
I will say that it was at around this point I was kind of going, can we hurry up with the ending now? I feel like we've been here for a while.
Yeah.
But sure enough, this is where we get the legally not powerhouse cue.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it's the powerhouse, but with a little extra steps. And I like this, but yeah,
which is funny, because like, it's a WB production. They have the rights.
But. Yeah, but like they decided, you know, oh, we're going to do our own thing. We're going to not do Powerhouse. I do think that this sort of like Powerhouse-y kind of thing, I think it went on for a bit too long. And he relents and he lets them do whatever they want. And they get to eat in the... I like the ending where they finally get to have food. And he just serves them as many pastries as they want.
Also, I did like the fantastic conductor joke.
Oh, yes. Leopold. I mean, even with everything I gushed about that, I don't have a ton to say about this one. It's a really strong display of the versatility of both these characters and the animation unit. This is both a really great send-up of and tribute to early animation, and it works as an Animaniacs cartoon as well, even without dialogue. I like that they're able to go into their usual setups and process. Like, there's an easy bully character they're able to mess with. I like this one a lot, even without dialogue.
Yeah, I feel my only issue with this one is I feel it is a little bit too repetitive in some sections. But once the gag actually started hitting, that's when it gets a little bit more better for me. It's a little more active. It's a little more, frankly, more entertaining.
Okay.
I will say it is kind of funny how we just covered 30s cartoons. So it's kind of funny watching this one going like, well, I don't know, if it was a 30s cartoon, it probably would have been more like this or more like that. But I think for the general prestige of older cartoon, I think it did a pretty serviceable job.
I think it's funny that you're saying it's too repetitive, because a lot of 30s cartoons we've covered have been pretty repetitive. So
that is true. So maybe they actually did do a better job than I expected.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Too good at the job.
Yeah. I give it a 4 out of 5.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Fair. Very fair. All right. Woodstock Slappy is one that I think we've both really wanted to cover. This one's directed by Audu Payton, written by John McCann and Tom Ruger, though Sherry Stoner does have a songwriting credit here.
I wonder what song she sings.
Yeah, I wonder. Okay, so this one is great because it's, from the very beginning, it's explaining to kids what the background of and what the eventual event of Woodstock was, which is one of the reasons why I love this cartoon, because it's informing and educating people on what Woodstock was other than just a music festival in a field in New York. It's more than that. It was the apex of that subculture. It was the very tip of 60s rock and roll. It's clear that the writers have reverence towards what they were able to do, even if they are going to spend some time lampooning it through Slappy. Now, that said, one of the first things we hear in this one is a rendition of Going Up the Country by Canned Heat.
Going up the country, gotta get away. Gotta leave the city, gotta get away. We might even be the USA.
Okay, now, because I'm going to be doing a lot of talking about like how great 60s rock and roll is and how great Woodstock was, and I'm going to be heaping a lot of praise. But if there is one thing I want to make absolutely clear in this episode, even as a fan of classic rock, I fucking hate Canned Heat. Like, they are the most inane 60s rock band ever. Like, oh, what's your song sound like? Oh, that's great. What's your other song sound like? Oh, that's wonderful. You got any other sound? No. Okay, great. Go away. I mean, at least when Bob Dylan did that, he wrote interesting things. Like, you know, and he was like, and you'd read the lyrics, and it's this amazing poetic thing that's actually criticizing this detail of American life. And Canned Heat, you read the lyrics, and it's just, we're going up the country. And that's what we're doing. And that's right, boys. We're going up the country. Like, who? And I want to make this absolutely clear. Who fucking cares? Now, I will say, I believe that is Rob doing the Canned Heat impression, so that's at least funny. But I just don't like Canned Heat at all. I like the Jamiroquai song Canned Heat, but I don't like the band Canned Heat.
I mean, to offset that terrible song, we do get, I think, one of the best positives about this, the segment, really good animation, both in the background and the shadows and the shading throughout this, but especially at this beginning as Slappy is walking along the electric wires to escape the city.
Yes. Escape the city. Copyright Crush 40 Sonic the Hedgehog soundtrack.
You've been around people playing video games for too long, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been talking to Taylor for too long. Follow me. Set me free. That's me. This guy from... Anyway. I like the concept that Skippy is fully entrenched in the vernacular and subculture of the hippie movements. Because he's the full, like, you know, with the glasses and... And, like, he's, you know, right on, man. Which is great, because the writer's got to tell his son to, all right, do your best, like, blissed out hippie voice, 8-year-old son, or whatever. It's like, oh, you got it, Dad!
So how exactly should I present this, Father? You know when you're up really late at night, you're really drowsy?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Do it like that. Or, like, you're really tired, and I don't know. But yeah, I like
really tired, but you also really want to eat some Cheetos.
Yeah, and not just the little ones. No, the puffs, the ones that go in a spiral. Those ones, those are really. Anyway, hey man, you got any more Cheetos? I like the line where Skippy goes to us and goes, "I had to get him out of the city, away from all those bad influences." You mean peace and love? Exactly, Skippy. I'm warning you. I'm warning you, with peace and love.
Oh, you went with the Ringo example. I was going to go much darker.
Darker than Ringo?
No, I was like, you know, like peace and love? Exactly. That stuff will get you shot in the back.
Yeah, fair. That works too. Sure. I love once they get to their little getaway cottage in Bethel Woods, apparently. I love the posters that Skippy puts on the wall. Hair. Love, more love. That's great. And he's blasting his guitar music. Slappy refers to some of the music as Bing Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And he didn't sue them.
No.
I will say, and you can tell that these writers know their stuff, Slappy murmuring rest and relaxation at last is a direct reference to Wabbitwubble, which means this is basically Wabbitwubble, but with more music jokes.
Essentially, but it's really well done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so, of course, you know, Slappy tries to get some sleep and is awoken by the entire cacophony of Woodstock, complete with Janis Joplin screeching, to which she goes. And I love their facial expressions as she's jerked up.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, somebody just ran over a dog. And again, the writers are really cheeky with a lot of the rock and roll stuff they weave in here. Because, like, when Slappy's jolted awake and Skippy just goes to her, something's happening here, but it ain't exactly clear. Well, thank you for that. And for what it's worth, that is a very cheeky Buffalo Springsfield reference. I wonder if it's as cheeky as what I just did.
No, but also what's really funny about this episode is that, you know, think about, okay, that was like 69. This episode has a copyright date of 1994, probably produced in 93. So, they're hitting right at the demographic where it's entirely possible if you're a parent watches with your kids.
Yes.
They're probably at Woodstock.
Yeah.
So you're just watching going like, oh shit. Okay.
You know what I just
said? The animated cartoons have hit up with my generation.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Literally.
We are reaching that now with the fucking Nostalgia Critic references in SpongeBob or whatever.
Well.
It's like, oh god, it's happening.
Yeah, that generation grew up all right. It just dawned on me, Mark, that 94 was the year that they did Woodstock 25, I think, right?
Was that the one with Green Day?
Yeah. Woodstock 94, the one where it rained and Green Day was just throwing mud at the... Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's very funny they're doing this Woodstock around the 25th anniversary of Woodstock and around when they would do the 25th anniversary concert of Woodstock. Very interesting at that time, the way it did. Also, speaking of this cartoon being cheeky, you get a little shot of the 60s versions of the Warners running across the shot. I love the bit where Skippy is explaining how perfect and how influential this moment in Woodstock and just explaining perfectly how everything that had led up to this moment had just culminated. And it's really a really great, like, monologue, and Slappy responds to it with
a bowl full of prunes would have the same effect.
I really like the hook here of Slappy herself being an old school 50s, 60s Looney Tunes character, not getting the subculture that the 60s brought. In essence, it's a metaphor for how the Warner Brothers animation unit stuck out in the 60s TV animation era and wasn't going to change or wasn't going to try and be too hip with, you know, with its old ways. And I like that as Slappy just like, no, I'm not gonna get the new stuff. I'm not gonna listen to Led Zeppelin or whatever.
No, nobody would have liked that.
No.
Really, no one would have wanted badly animated Looney Tunes cartoons where they referenced the Beatles and the Who.
No, nobody would have.
It would be embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Completely embarrassing.
Yeah, Hanna-Barbera only had its own mileage with that. So I will say this cartoon does go for some of the deeper cut Woodstock anthems. Like the I Feel Like I'm Fixing to Die rag by Country Joe and the Fish, which is used in a lot of Vietnam things because that was very much one of the most famous anti-Vietnam songs. You know, 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? And so they do their own sort of rendition of that that isn't as expressly about the Vietnam War.
And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam.
It's 8:10:12. I'm just killing time. My contract says to sing a song. Yeah, I made a rhyme.
And a rendition of Brand New Key by Melanie that's more about cheese, I believe.
Who's got a box of brand new crackers? I've got some brand new cheese.
So they're having fun. My favorite here, and I think your favorite here, is the Joe Cocker gag. The his version.
Release
of
the scream!
Yeah. No, it's his version of with a little help from my friends, which I always erroneously thought they were going after Ringo, but no, it is a Joe Cocker thing. What's funny is they use the original Ringo lyric of what would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you throw a tomato at me?
Would you still cheer if I had a tin ear? Or would you throw a tomato at me?
Yes.
I love it so.
Yeah.
You know what that means, folks? That means we've had two Ringo Starr at references in this movie, and Jess Harnell hasn't even said a line of dialogue as Wacko.
Oh, yeah. How about that?
Power of Ringo. That? And that
yes.
leads us
so
to...
So the whole purpose... Yeah, so, again, so I was trying to get to the stage to tear everyone to buzz off.
Yeah.
And... Yeah.
It leads to the most classic bit of this, which is the Who's on First routine, which is even funnier if you know your 60s rock and roll, because it's one thing to just know that the Who is a thing, but also just throwing in all these other bands with really simple names. Like, my favorite bit in this is, no, Aunt Slappy, Yes isn't even at this concert, which is accurate. Yes wasn't at Woodstock. And then, of course, do you see the band on stage? No, I don't see the band. That's a different group entirely.
No, the band comes on later.
But it's so funny. And it's also just a good use of, like, you know, they actually get... They have a lot of fun with how they animate the Who, and they have, you know, Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend and all of them. So it's a really funny bit. One might even say it goes on for too long. I am not one. I think it goes on the perfect amount of time. I love that after, and again, it's great because Sherry Stoner plays it so well.
Skippy, what's the name of that group playing on stage?
Who?
The name of the group.
Who?
The group on stage.
Who?
The group playing on stage.
Who?
You're starting to sound like an owl, Skippy.
Who is on stage?
That's what I'm asking you. Who is on stage?
That's what I said.
You said who?
I sure did.
So tell me the name.
Who?
The name of the group.
Who?
The group on stage.
Who?
The name of the band on stage.
Who?
You're doing that owl thing again, Skippy.
I am not Aunt Slappy. I'm telling you who's on stage.
So tell me.
Who?
The name of the group.
Who?
The group on stage.
Who?
That's what I'm asking you.
And I'm telling you the answer.
Wait, Skippy, let's start over. Is there a band on stage?
Yes.
Does that band have a name?
Yes.
Do you know the name of that band?
Yes.
Then tell me the name of the band on stage.
Who?
The name of the band.
Who?
The band on stage.
Who?
The band playing on stage.
Who?
That's what I want to know.
I'm telling you.
Who is on stage?
Yes.
Who is?
Yes.
Oh, so the name of the band is Yes.
No, Aunt Sloppy. Yes is not even at this concert.
Then who is on stage?
Yes.
Who is?
Yes.
That's what I just said. Yes is on stage.
No, Yes is not here. Who is on stage?
What are you asking me for?
I'm not.
Wait, let's try this again. Do you see the band on stage?
No, I don't see the band. That's a different group entirely.
On stage, Skippy. Look, see the band?
No, I don't.
Get rid of those John Lennon glasses and look. There. There's the band.
No, that's not the band. The band is performing later on. Who's on stage?
You tell me.
Who?
The name of the group on stage.
Who?
The name of the group.
Who?
The group on stage.
Who?
The band.
No, the band is performing later. Right now, we're listening to who?
That's what I want to know.
It's not the exact same length as the original Who's On First.
No, the original Who's On First is way longer.
About, like, who gets paid or whatever.
Yeah, because the original Who's On First is not just about, you know, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third. But they do the whole team, you know, pitching is tomorrow, I believe. And I believe catching is today. And then there's a long fly ball to Because. And I don't care. Oh, that's our shortstop. They played this on a loop in Cooperstown. I know it backwards and forwards. I have a glass at home, a drinking glass that has the entire transcript of Who's On First on it. It's friggin' great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's so fucking good.
Apparently, the first word I ever said was, I think, baseball or bleh ball or something like that. And I was in Cooperstown. He was
hell
at, because you're surrounded by baseball stuff eventually. You should be like, yeah baseball. Yeah. I get it. Thank you.
Well, that must have been because
I understand.
I don't know. I'm not going to assume when it was because that would be too weird. But yeah, no.
Yes, that would be crazy. We were both there these same time.
No, I know for a fact we weren't there at the same time. My first time going there was 2005. That was when Wade Boggs got inducted. Yeah, I've been there a bunch of times because it wasn't too far from where we would stay in Lake George when we were going on vacation there. So it's really cool up there. It's not the exact length of Who's On First, but they go on for a while, and I love how animated Sherry Stoner gets and just how angry she gets as it progressively gets even harder for her to understand. And I love the ending where they just bow and they get applause. It's like, oh yeah, great bit. And that gets them on stage.
And then just a little bit like, and who are you? Oh, we're the Who. Don't start with me.
It's great. I love, this is almost the sequel to not expecting Barney to show up in the Flintstones movie. This is cutting back to the stage and seeing like Slappy and Skippy and just a very confused looking Jimi Hendrix just there next to them going, what am I doing? How does Jimi Hendrix not expect to be on stage at Woodstock? What was he smoking? How strong was that stuff? Which is not the first time I'm going to say that in this episode. Not the last time, that is. I love the bit here where Slappy smashes one of the guitars into the amp, and the Who frequently ended their live performances by smashing their instruments in this era, are impressed, and they all start following suit. But Pete Townsend does a windmill throwing his guitar into the amp. Again, you can tell they love rock and roll, because like that's perfect. I love that Slappy's eventual solution is clearing out Woodstock by playing polka. Because antiquated, tacky music was the enemy of the subculture. And remember, if you've ever seen Good Morning Vietnam, which, Mark, I'm pretty sure you have, Bruno Kirby... Bruno Kirby played all his polkas when he got control of the radio station again, because Robin Williams was spending all this time playing rock and roll music and radicalizing the people that were out there. And so, like, no, let's play something inoffensive, like polka. And so, yeah, that's the enemy of the subculture. Boring music that doesn't actually inspire anything, like polkas and jazz. Not jazz, but, like, just boring old white person music. Like, what's going to happen there? So that's how they clear out Woodstock with this polka song that Slappy sings. But, yeah, no, we fade out after that, and it's Slappy giving a little accordion solo to the camera. And that's the story of how Slappy ruined Woodstock. It's practically perfect, man. Not only do the writers love rock music, but they understood how important the subculture was in that era, and both sides of that issue. This really worked as a Slappy and Skippy cartoon, as well as a really thorough history lesson that also rewards people who know about it. So much is done well here. There's so many great gags, so many great, like, Easter eggs and things. It's one of my favorites for a reason, and it still holds up.
Yeah, same, man. I love the animation in this one. Yes. You can tell they got their best people on it. I love the gag work in this. I love the fact that, I mean, in the credits of this episode, it says Jim Cummings rocks singers, which I know Jess Harnell and Tress did some voices, but I do love the idea of just, yeah, Jim Cummings could just do all of Woodstock, I guess, if he wanted to. It's like, okay, that's a neat factoid, sure. You know? Go in one day doing Winnie the Pooh, go the next.
Yeah.
Jim Hendrix, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
This is, in my opinion, this is one of, if not the best Slappy Squirrel segment this show ever did, and I'm saying by that.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because we haven't covered many Slappy and Skippy cartoons while doing this show.
No.
And it's a shame because I actually really like Slappy and Skippy. I think Slappy's a great character. I think Terry Stoner's a really good, an underrated performer. And they should have remembered that when bringing back the characters for Hulu. No, I love this one, and I'm glad that this holds up. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 5.
I'm also giving this segment a 5 out of 5 animals.
Awesome.
Really enjoyed this one. And yeah. Jordan, before we move on to the next Animaniacs episode, I have one question for you.
Yeah.
If James Caan is pronounced Khan, then can James Caan eat a pecan?
How long did it take you to come up with that?
Oh, I wrote it down as soon as we were done with the pecan assortment.
How much pecans could a James Caan pecan if a James Caan could pecan pecans?
Exactly. Okay, so the second episode we were covering today, we went from the 1990s. Now we're going all the way to the distant year of 2023.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Great. So distant.
Who can imagine?
Yeah.
Yes, this is from the 2020 Animaniacs reboot, season 3, episode 4, Uyper Naxmare. Followed by Mad Mouse Furry Road, came out on February 17th, 2023. Because what happened on that day, the number one song in the US and the UK was Flowers by Miley Cyrus.
Okay. Perfectly fine song.
So we have a cold open here.
Yeah, we do. They have a lot of those in the UK.
That's being very, very liberal with the term cold open, because this is long. This is like...
Yeah.
What, 3-4 minutes of the episode, it feels like.
It's a lukewarm open.
Yes, this fantasy send-up sequence.
Yeah.
Which was written by Kathleen Chen, Brian Polk, and Wesley Wild, directed by Brett Barron. And what this is, first of all, this is completely animated by the WB Animation retake team from scratch. This is all completely original Warner Bros. Animation. This is an out-of-house, which is really cool because I really do like the look of this piece.
Yeah.
It's Lord of the Rings. It's Lord of the Rings parody, which, you know, is WB owns Lord of the Rings, saying them. Corporate synergy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's this reveal of this great wizard who took over Warnertopia or whatever, as it's revealed that it's the brain. It's just the brain. He finally took over Warner Brothers studio, as, you know, he gives these four demons, these three demons in the apocalypse, essentially, to wreak havoc. And it turns out that they're actually, it's the Warners as these monstrous beasts. And a lot of this is really just cool animation, really, of just, you know, the Warners, they play with a bunch of these potions and they look different. There's one where like Gakko takes one. Oh, hold on, is Gakko or Gakko? It's, I'm pretty sure it's Gakko, the one where he's a horse, but like his half of his face is the horse's nose and nostril, and the other one just,
Dot had the one where just a bunch of animals come out of her mouth, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, as the brain just falls to his doom as Pinky tries to get it. Of course, he misses the brain as they run off. Then we get this nice fourth wall break, which is, we have to go after the one with the big eye. As it turns out, the one with the seeing eye was the audience, leading to a great wacko line, like, they even see us when we're in the bathroom.
Weirdos.
Guys, are you weirdos? Kick us out into a very nice transition shot into our opening sequence, which is very nice. Yeah. It's one of the few times where it does that, I think, which is really cool.
I like that. I wasn't as high on the animation as you were. I think the animation in the very beginning was a lot stockier and more awkward than I'm used to. I agree with you on the gag work. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. I did like the bit where the brain's about to go into his line about tomorrow, and then just an ogre that looks like Ralph just steps on him abruptly. I like that. It's a filler piece basically, but you know, it's pretty good. It's animated well for the most part.
Yeah, I give that a 3.5 out of 5 anvils. The animation really helped it more than the gags.
That's what I'm giving it.
So we go into our first main segment of the episode called Übernachtmare, which was directed by Brad DiPrima, written by Brad DiPrima. And this cartoon and its title parodies the Uber ride sharing service. Before I go into it, Jorn, any memorable Uber or ride sharing experiences you had?
I don't take them very often, but it's mostly when I'm when I have to fly to some city, then meet somebody there. Like I have to fly alone and then get an Uber from the airport. And so last year, and I'm gonna purposely not put a lot of details in this. Earlier this year actually, I was in Phoenix. And I had to get an Uber from the airport to the hotel. And the hotel I was staying in was actually had high amount of security. So this Uber driver goes into and I'm directing him into the main way of going through here. And it's a convoy where police dogs have to go around the car and make sure it ends. I don't know if he was prepared for that, but he must have thought I was some VIP or whatever. I was just some schmo going to a game, But yeah, no, I don't take Uber enough to get weird drivers or whatever. Just, they're doing their thing.
Yeah, I'm very much a, I do take, I'm in too many rides to my work. And I'm very much a, get in the car, say hi, and then just not say anything, go on my phone for most of the ride. Though I will say, I can't tell you how many times. Listen, public transit sucks. It does. That's why Ubers were made, essentially, to divulge them. And the reason for that is because I cannot tell you how many times I've been okay, I shouldn't take an Uber or Lyft right now because I got to save some money. It's only $2-something for the bus to get from my work back to my home. I should really do that. So I look at the schedule. I plan out perfectly. And I cannot tell you how many times I've waited by the bus stop and the bus just drives on right by.
Yeah.
Or it misses me for some reason. Or in fact, recently, Jordan, I was waiting in the rain, pouring rain. It was bad. And I was underneath a tree. And I'm like, looking at the bus. Oh, okay. And then I start walking out, and the bus goes right by me. And I was pissed. I was pissed. I'm like, God damn it. This is why the Ubers are beating their fucking asses, because convenience. You know? Yeah, it's expensive, but the convenience.
Well, if only there was like a better sort of transport system, like, you know, but anyway.
Yes. Also, in this episode, there is a joke about Spider-Man. Because Dot has two spiders, both named after actors Tom Holland and Tobey Maguire. That's why was there not a third one? I don't know.
Yeah, they should have had an Andrew Garfield one. Yeah, but I think it's only funny for two spiders. Yeah. But yeah.
So, the plot of this short is that Tractor Sniff is going to an important award show. He's going to win this prestigious, oddly specific award. The 37th?
The top 38 best psychiatrists in West Burbank.
As he goes, and he orders his Uber to go in. And, oh no, the warders are coming with him. So to reiterate for those at home, Trasher Sniff has to get to an important destination in a car for a long period of time. It's very important he gets there. And also, the warders are there, and they're going to drive him insane. Jordan, have you ever heard of an Animaniacs cartoon called I'm Mad?
I haven't seen that one. But this is definitely a formula I've seen before in Animaniacs cartoons. So
yes, so that it's interesting because it's a theatrical cartoon. Actually, it aired in front of some Warner Brothers, probably some shitty family movie, because that's all they did. And in fact, it made news recently because I believe the theatrical print of that short was recently found. Because they would put the short in a regular IMAX episode in a 4:3 aspect ratio. And it's like, oh, it's nice, but the theatrical print is much more cleaner and in more detail.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the plot of I'm Mad. It's they're on a car trip, and the warners get bored, so they annoy Scratch and Sniff. So that's kind of funny. It's like, oh, we're doing this again. All right, cool. I mean, it's different.
Pretty much.
Uber
yeah.
driver.
Well, it's slightly different.
The one thing they would have done a little bit more with this one is play more with the Uber driver, because she's very much just a participant. She's not really part of the gags in this. She's just doing it. I feel like we have done a little more gag work with her. But anyways. Well,
they could have done a lot more in general with the concept, because there's really only one thing that they do with the Uber. Which is this thing where Wacko, who is going to a food eating contest, wants to go and get drive through.
Can I take your order?
Yes, I'll just have 2 cheeseburgers, a large fry, a small fry, 3 cheeseburgers, chicken nuggets, chicken tendies, 4 cheeseburgers.
9!
Oh, okay, 9 cheeseburgers.
No. 9 for some more burgers, Wacko.
Got it. 18 cheeseburgers, 7 medium fries, a red soda, a yellow soda, and an orange soda. And don't mix them up.
Rob's stoner teen voice hasn't aged a day, because I can tell that's him as the drive-thru guy. But Wacko, has this insane drive-thru order that makes me wonder if he did the pay-it-forward thing like Tim Robinson did.
Yeah, that is what I wrote down here, which is Tim...
Yep.
Tim Robinson, you stealing snake!
Yeah, and this came out before that one did, too, so that's pretty funny. And I like that Scratch and Sniff keeps screwing up the order, where he goes, 9! No, sorry, 9 cheeseburgers! And I like that he gets all of this heap of food, and then they have to go back minutes later because they didn't give... There's a difference between chicken tendies and chicken nuggies, which is something that... A conversation I've had with my friend Christian all the time, because he is of the tendy... persuasion, which that sounds like I'm calling him gay. He's not. Yes, my friend, he's of the tendy persuasion.
You know they are them tendies. Damn it, George. How many fucking gay jokes do I have to cut out of this show?
Not enough, if you ask me.
Folks at home don't realize, in every episode, that's not cool, folks. There's 20% of gay jokes we cut out of every single episode. If we'll release it next Pride Month.
And 90% of them don't come from Mark. Oh, man.
By the way, George, just out of curiosity, I mean, what do you prefer, tenders or nuggets?
I'm a tenders boy. Absolutely. More chicken on that. Absolutely. Yeah.
No, actually, dude, do you know that Chili's it now costs $15 for their tenders?
Well, they changed the recipe as well.
Yeah. Sucks. What the hell?
I don't like that.
$15 tenders that aren't as good. It makes no damn sense. Anyways.
Yeah, because the old recipe is really good. One. Yeah, sorry.
So, I do this one. I do this one gag of the seasons going by. They're in this driving line. Comes fall, then winter, and it's just it's so damn funny.
Very silly. But we're still doing only one aspect of getting a ride share with other people, and they don't. And right when you think that they're going to do other aspects of getting an Uber pool, Scratch and Sniff leaves the car, and it turns into other modicums of transportation.
Yes, as we get the reveal that the Dot's other spider has escaped, which is named Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, so of course.
It's like, oh no, Tobey Maguire left! And then just Yaku going, wow, that joy had one! And I do love Tress's read of.
Oh, well, I had two, I think.
I like that too. I will say, the sequence of Scratch and Sniff running with all these signs torturing him and about like just a marquee saying running late or things like that. It's really well animated, I like that. But, like, it leads to, like, them doing the same gag five times of him getting on another method of transportation, then going, oh, we have to just make one stop, and it's just the Warners. And then, all right, then just repeating that over and over again, instead of actually filling out more gags in the Uber. Like, it's like they lost hope in that.
No, I did like when Trashdev is going through the options, one of them is piggyback. We're a piggyback yes. Uber if you wanted to. I love that.
Yeah, but he goes through, like, he does a helicopter one. He does what he thinks is a horse and ends up being a very talkative mule voiced by Frank Welker, so I like that. Getting into running into a pole and an ambulance comes by, takes the pole.
That's a Simpsons gag if I've ever seen one.
It is. Yeah. And it's the same gag over and over with them. Oh, the ambulance, oh, we gotta go see more. Oh, yeah, I'm gonna run there. Oh, okay. So it's and then there's a gag with him on a stretcher and another guy is asking if he wants to go to the stretcher convention. That's the one goofy gag.
Was that guy supposed to be someone?
I don't think so. I think it was just a random guy.
Just be a random person. All right, detailed random person. Also, I did write down here because you know they're waiting for Trash and Stuff the award, and of course the presenter is like, oh dear, he didn't show up. Well, this is me for my abandonment issues. Animaniacs, like 2020. We acknowledge mental health now.
Yes.
I say as 15 seconds later, Scratch gets thrown into a very stereotypical straitjacket in a padded room. We're going crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever.
I mean, I honestly, I don't like how that ends up for Scratch in it because he's so winded by everything that he messes up his speech, and the spider makes him mess up even further. And so that means, apparently, that he's certifiable, and they throw him away. You know, I see what some people are saying about the Family Guy comparisons, because the exchange here, which I liked, of this is why people don't trust doctors. I thought your husband was a doctor. No, he's not. He's a chiropractor, but don't tell him that. It's like, just throw away jokes like that. But I don't think that his ending is really earned, because he's just, you know, I don't think he deserves that, honestly.
No, not really. I mean, I don't know what they could have done to improve it, but I especially didn't like the final lines here, where it kind of just ends with a thud. Yeah. Where it just, you know, he's gone crazy, and he's yelling, and also, Dr. Scratch and Sniff, where he's going crazy and gets high-pitched, it's kind of Rob going into his pinky voice for a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Look out! Autobahn spider flag coming through! Look me up! What's through a wheezy keys!
Sure. All right, Rob.
But, sure. Yeah, it's just faded. Just back out. It's like, oh, he's actually yelling at the supermarket or something. And the Warners are like,
it's the just one more stop mark.
Yes. It's like, one more stop.
Just one more stop.
Oh, fucking hell. Damn it. Oh, I just got it. Shit. Yeah, it just, the last line just got going. I'll order him a ride. And it's like, oh, okay. I don't know. I feel like I'm going for a stronger ending, honestly. I don't know. Probably. Maybe like, actually, yeah, you know what? It probably should have ended with him. in the truck. So she's the warning zone, goes, drives off. That's really ended, but no, they had to do one more gag. And
I had some issues with this one because a lot of the issues I already talked about where, like, I thought there'd be more gags in the Uber, and then it turns into, like, all the transportation gags with the same ending, and then I didn't think that Scratch and Sniff's what happens to him is very earned. It's just repeating the same thing over and over and throwing in the spider thing for good measure just to have more chaos. It felt like a mishmash of ideas that didn't really have as cohesive as a frame as they thought. I mean, there were some good lines here, some good moments, but honestly, it's just too flawed for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think it started pretty strong. I'll give it that. It did really start pretty strong. I really liked the fast food line bits. I found that was the best part of it.
Honestly, yeah.
The rest of it's kind of just, you know, it's typical cartoon plot line and not so much Animaniacs plot line. Something we said a lot in our previous 2020 reboot episode was that it felt very SpongeBob. Felt very like against Squidward. Like those are against Squidward episodes. That's what kind of felt.
Yeah.
Like. He didn't feel justified from he has to go through this because that's what his character is supposed to be. He can never have success. He's just going to get an award. It's not like he's. The Warrens have nothing to do with it. They're just the ones who got into the carpool. But, it's fine. I definitely have seen that worse.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 3 out of 5.
Same. They am also going to say 3 out of 5 animals.
Yeah.
All right. Now to this one. This is Mad Mouse. Mad Mouse Furry Road. Directed by Brett Baron, written by Kathleen Chen and Brian Pope. Some interesting notes here about this episode. It begins with a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas setting.
Yeah, I was like, why is Brain dressed like Raul Duke?
Because why not? Because it makes sense. We begin with Pinky and the Brain. They're driving down the desert road to a music festival entitled the Hot Sand Festival.
So Burning Man.
According to Hulu, they said it was a music festival. Hulu lied. That's why I picked this episode. It said music festival. I went, oh, Woodstock, Burning Man. They're the same thing. Right?
No, they're not. People were on hallucinogenics in both, but they're at least vibing to something that wasn't coming out of a fucking speaker in the first one.
So, Brain presents his plan, you know, because of climate change and everything, in like 64.5 years, the entire Earth is going to turn into desert. So he has this evil plan, and I love how he blames, you know, it's climate change mixed with the people who steal the little shampoo bottles out of hotels, as Pinky just goes, guilty! They're the perfect addition to smoothies. Pours into a thing, chugs it. Points.
So good.
Yes. Pinky is so fun in this.
In this one, yes. Absolutely.
Pinky is great. We get the review that it's Burning Man.
Yeah.
And they're all in traffic as Pinky jumps up and goes, Brain, this is just like the opening to La La Land when Ryan Gosling discovered jazz.
Which is a funny line, but maybe he hasn't aged too well.
No, I mean, as you're going to find out. So they drive in, and we get pretty much the reveal of Brain's plan, which is, also I do love the reveal when Brain reveals the machine which is in this truck. I do love Brain's, I do love Pinky's delivery of, I love it, Brain! What is it, Brain?
What is this?
As this is what Brain's plan is, and like, listen, I know these are meant to be comical, in the same lane as, you know, like Dr. Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb is derived from Pinky and the Brain, pretty much, in regards to, you know, crazy ideas to take over the world, essentially. Maybe Dan should have been around the show. Anyways,
Yeah, probably.
So, yeah, because I say that because this idea is really stupid.
A little.
Like, not like funnies, it's just really stupid, which is, okay, we establish a yoga studio, which is called Sweatin' to the Yogis.
Which is funny.
Which they really should have had Yogi Bear. I was like,
hey, I'm in this one too.
But Yogi, what will the Rangers think?
I don't know. I'm too high to do my usual line. It's Burning Man, remember?
What about the Ranger, Yogi? Oh, no.
Hey, man, have some more of this.
The drugs are kicking in. Pass the Cheetos. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, again, so they're going to collect the sweat from the people who do yoga, and, like, that will be converted to H2O. So his plan is that he's going to essentially hold all the water in the world. So it's like a reverse water world, essentially.
Yeah, but it's also basically the plot of Mad Max Fury Road, where Immortan Joe stockpiles all the water and only gives it out to when they're just itching for it and in small spurts.
So Pinky gets flung away from Brain as he's finishing his spiel, as Pinky lands by this man whose name is Dexter. A guy named Dexter.
Yeah.
And he's dressed up like, you know, like a Burning Man, you know, kind of story. He's like, yes, you know, I know this area. It's really nice. I'll show you around. And, you know, I can tell. Oh, that's right. There's the, he does a thanks I owe you one that goes on for too long. Like, way too long.
Yeah. Thanks. I owe you one. Except I don't have any ones on me, so I'll have to go to the ATM. But since the smallest bills they carry are 20s, I'll need to make change somewhere. And one final thing, I don't have an ATM card per se. Can I borrow yours?
There is a lot of that in this segment of just Pinky rambling. Yeah. As much as I love Pinky, it does kind of feel like you're doing it just to kill time. Which, that's...
okay.
It might be. Though I do like the line from Pinky. It's like, oh, well, a brain calls me biodegradable waste. I like that. That was good.
It's great. By the way, Dexter is voiced by Christian Mantopoulos. Christian Mantopoulos has been the primary Mickey Mouse for a lot of the more comedy-prone Mickey productions Disney's been doing, especially the Paul Rudish series.
Yeah.
He's gotten a lot of voice acting gigs in the last 10 or so years. I know him best as Mo Howard in the 2012 Three Stooges movie, of which he was undeniably the closest to the original. Talented cat. Mostly a spare parts guy in Hollywood, but he's found his niche as a voice actor, definitely. He's decent here, because he shows some range.
Yeah. Yes, as this character named Dexter is just showing Pinky around, you know, he mentions how, you know, he's dating the DJ who's like, being lifted, feet off the ground, playing a keyboard as he does a parts with his hand because it's the 2020s. Totally. Totally the 2020s. Nothing else. As, you know, there's, I don't know, there's, anyway, so.
Mark doesn't like this one, folks.
I don't, okay, listen, here's, okay.
I have not heard you, Mark, and I say this, like, you know, yeah. I'm on your side here, but I have not heard you detail a cartoon with more disgust in a while.
Okay, listen. Okay.
You're like, and this guy named Dexter, he's showing him around. Why is he showing him around? And then why is he dating a DJ? What's wrong with that? And why does he walk away? And what's with the, why is this a cartoon? It could be live action for fuck's sake.
Should I get into my issues with this character now?
If you'd like.
Okay, here's our main issue with this episode. This episode came out in 2023. It feels like it was written in 2016.
Well, it couldn't be written in 2016. La La Land didn't come out
yet. When did La La Land come out?
Oh, wait, no, that was the La La Land year. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2016. Yeah, I thought it was 2017 for some reason. Here's the thing. What? Why do you think it's a 2016 thing?
Okay. Number one, there's a La La Land and a Mad Max Fury Road rip. The whole thing is a Mad Max Fury Road send up. Fury Road's in 2015. Okay. It was very hot at that time. Hell, Rick and Morty even did a reference about how it's uncool to do a Mad Max Fury Road parody after it came out. Number one. Number two, Dexter is an Elon Musk stand-in. We're in the year 2023, where Elon Musk is a disgusting human being. He's a horrible person. Mm-hmm. He is not good.
Yeah.
In 2016, we did know that. In 2016, we hauled him as a hero. We let him be on The Simpsons. We, like, this guy, he was in Iron Man 2. We had this guy as our idol. And his only personality trait was like, oh, he wants to save the world. He's a little bit eccentric, but it's whatever. Watching this, it feels so dated. That's what really annoys me about this, is that this is a 2023 product, but I feel like this is the most 2016 representation of what anime next gen and opinion the brain segment could ever be, and it kind of infuriates me.
I mean, do you think it doesn't portray him as villainous enough?
Part of that, yeah. Absolutely, part of it is that. I think part of it is that if this was just written even 2 or 3 years later, I think there'd be a lot more material to die for with an Elon Musk send up. Yeah. Here it's just what is so interesting about this bad guy? He's not. And that's another thing that pisses me off. And that this is a Pink in the Brain segment where Pink in the Brain have to go up against a villain. I hate that.
Yeah, that's another thing that I didn't love, because it should be about them causing their own comeuppance.
That's more fun. It's more, you get more gags that way. That's how these things go. And having a bad guy, a villain, in a Pain in the Brain segment, it just feels wrong. And beyond this, yeah, I guess the moment where Brain realizes that all the people who go to this Burning Man are actually intelligent people that just go there to get the edge off, that's funny. I get that. Because, this year of Burning Man, like, Chris Rock was there. It's the weirdest fucking thing. It's like, oh, what the hell? But,
well, this year at Burning Man, a bunch of people caught dysentery, right?
I don't fucking know. I think so.
They caught something. Dengue fever or some disease. I don't know. Something was going around.
Yeah.
Chris Rock actually broke quarantine. But anyway, yeah. No, I don't find as much wrong with their depiction of this Musk-like character as you do. I think that they portray him as perfectly villainous. I think that they show him as perfectly full of shit. And they just sort of, it occurs to us as the cartoon goes on how detestable and full of shit he is, and we come to trust him for a brief second before he becomes the villain later on. And also, to your point about this being dated, Mark, I don't know if you remember this, but Hulu held on to the finished episodes for a fucking long time and only dropped them at like random points. So this coming out in 2023 could have been avoided if they had just rolled things out traditionally and rolled this out as a season rather than just doing a slow trickle because they didn't want to pay their animators as much. So, like, this could have been avoided. They could have put this out earlier in the batch, but they decided not to. Why they did that, we don't know.
This absolutely should have been a season one segment. I think you put it in season one.
Absolutely.
It's a little bit more forgiving because a big thing with season one of the Animatrix reboot that a lot of people were complaining about was that it was playing catch up to a lot of things. It was a little bit too pop culture. Okay, well, the original show was pop, but especially in, because, you know, yeah, like you said, felt a bit too Family Guy, so a little bit too cynical. I feel this definitely would have prospered more as a season one episode than a season three. Where by season three, the one thing I will give to season three, I haven't seen a lot of season three. What I can give to season three is I think by the time they got season three, they were a little bit more open. They're able to do their own voice. They were able to not just go, okay, who's the celebrity we can LARP on for this episode that hopefully will stay relevant in the next 10 or 15 years after the episode comes out.
Yeah.
Case in point, that JoJo Siwa episode they did right around the time she completely changed her image and it was no longer top.
Yeah.
That's...
it's less like what they were doing and more what Hulu was doing and actually releasing the show. But if we want to get back to what the episode actually is.
Yeah. So go back to Brain.
Yes.
And he's doing this yoga session and, of course, does all this to get the sweat. And he bridges his speech. You know, hey, listen, you know, I have water if you want it. I need every single person that has a PhD to come up here. And they all do. And just, I do love Brain's line of...
No, I said PhD, not free HD TV or whatever it is you think you heard, you sun-dried dilettante.
Which I think is a very sly LSD joke.
No, there's a line in here, around here is the, are you pondering what I'm pondering here? And, you know, the joke this time is, I think so, Brian, but if 789 did Jen Jack Queen, what do you mean by Jack? Mark, are you pondering what I'm pondering?
Actually, I'm not. What? What Jack? We don't have a running
joke. Ten Jack Queen? No, I mean like, all right. First of all, I just did a motion, and then I realized that we're not even doing screen recording. Yeah. Yeah, like, did Ten jack off the queen? No, our jokes are dying. Let's just keep going.
Please.
Yeah. You know what? Fine. Let's just cut to the thing this actually should fucking be, which is the Fury Road sequence, which is the best part of this cartoon because it actually does a lot that's like Mad Max Fury Road. It's high intensity, high action, and it's really well paced, and they do it. Like, there's like actual references to the movie, like the DJ almost is like the Doof Warrior guitar player in that, and the dirt under Brain's eyes make him look like Tom Hardy in that movie. It's actually really awesome.
And also, there's a very awkward line from the Elon Musk character of, my hot babies, if you want to go to space, then bring daddy his Wawa.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
Please let us write for animated shows. We promise we can do better.
Please. Please. We're right here, guys. But yeah, no, it's just lots. I mean, this chase sequence is good, mostly because it doesn't involve mostly any dialogue. But there is one really good dialogue thing that I like when they're about to run off a cliff and Brain says, much like a gentrifying city, it appears we're quickly running out of real estate. So at least there's a line in here that hasn't aged too poorly.
Yeah. Yes, as they set up this elaborate death trap, essentially, where they set up the machine to fall off the cliff as they slow motion jump out of the truck, which I gotta admit, was pretty wild main sequence. Jumping out of the truck as it falls off the cliff, as the Elon Musk and the Grimes send up DJ whatever the fuck. It's like yes, we'll fly. You see the meters almost at blast off range and immediately fails. They fall to the ground as Pinky and the Brain are looking down. And I would have liked an explosion. It's like, Brain, are they all right?
That would have been good. Again, we can write better than this.
That'll be fine, Pinky. Let's go prepare for tomorrow night.
Yeah, but no, we get that.
But no. We get this. All right, so we get this. So they go away. As you transition back to the cliff, as it turns out, they're fine. I do like the one little joke where the character thinks that an ambulance is coming, but it's just his girlfriend on the keyboard.
She's playing the keyboard. I like that.
Yes. And then we get, okay, listen, not that this could piss me off anymore, but we get my least favorite bit of writing in anything, which is the old-fashioned daring the network to not cancel you trick. Where this character is screaming like, oh, I'll be back in season 4 in a bigger bit that pays more than guest star. Wahahaha.
No. Well, that never happened, and I'm glad it never happened.
Though, there's a little part of me that would have been like, if they did bring him back, maybe the writing on his character would have been a little more sharp, a little more,
maybe,
you know, a little more extra, maybe, but no. So needless to say, this could have been better.
you think?
Maybe if it got a rewrite before it went to production to have things feel a bit more modernized. Honestly, Rick and Morty did a better send-up of a Mad Max parody done well after the parody was ripe. Yeah, I said it. The Elon jokes aren't even pandering or bad. They're just incredibly simple, have no bite to them. Like, the only biting joke they have about Elon in this is just, a non-self-made billionaire. That's the sharpest it goes. Yeah. Which again, it isn't the point. They weren't striving. They were literally just like, okay, we need a bad guy. We can probably do an Elon Musk sort of send-up thing. Like, the whole point wasn't, sure, let's take the piss out of Elon Musk. It was just, oh, what could a conventional bad guy be in today's society? Oh, probably an Elon Musk type, circa 2016. it's not the point, but it's not interesting, and I don't like you when being the brain have to go up against a bad guy.
Yeah, so I initially I thought I liked this a little better than you did. I think I still do. The best part of this is the Fury Road stuff. That was great. I think that putting a Musk-type character to complicate things is a bit too generic. I still think this is good. It's okay. I can see why it pisses you off. It didn't piss me off quite as much, although there are some of the things that, now that you mention it, do infuriate me a little bit. It does a lot of things I would not have done. And I know that that's not fair of that fair of a criticism, but in this case, it's like, okay, you're breaking from the formula to do other things that you think you can do, but you really can't. So, I don't know what to tell you.
I'm giving this episode a 2.5 out of 5 anvils.
I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. You know, they tried.
And, just to be completely fair, this is just a bad segment from the reboot.
Yes.
I'm not writing off the whole goddamn show because of it.
No, we liked some of the ones we covered earlier this year. You know.
Exactly. There's plenty of good Pain in the Brain segments in this reboot. This just wasn't one of them. Let's see what you guys had to say about these two Animaniacs episodes.
All right. It does not surprise me in the least that we have a comment here from a podcast dedicated to Pinky and the Brain, the official Poitcast podcast. Twitter accounts responded to us there. There was a lot of different thoughts that Poitcast wrote down about these. Said that Ragamuffins, not Ronald Moring, Ragamuffins, one of his favorite silent era Warner shorts, good visual gags, well, good direction. Star Tunes did a fantastic job with the animation. I feel like the crew members who worked on Wacko's Wish adopted Dot's tattered coat look from this short, which, yeah, being that we just covered Wacko's Wish for a forthcoming episode. Yeah, I can see that.
I also have thoughts about Woodstock Slappy, one of their favorite Slappy cartoons. It's very much a You Kids Got My Lawn story, but yes, has a lot of fun with the Woodstock setting. While I'll admit that the Who's on Stage went on for a bit longer than I expected, oh, well,
we liked it.
As evident by what's in this episode, I hope you liked it. The line deliveries were strong. It's a solid Abbott and Costello reference. I love the conclusion with Slappy scaring the concert goers with her polka music and bad singing.
Doesn't have much to say about Uber Nachtmare. Said that it's solid. What's very interesting here, considering what we thought about or what you thought about Mad Max Fury Road, is Voidcast really likes that one. Says one of my favorite Pinky and the Brain segments from the reboot. I love that it was not a scene-by-scene parody of Mad Max, but the build-up to the car chase scene was clever in highlighting climate change. The riffs on Burning Man felt organic, and the references to the film were funny. Brain rocking the Furiosa eye makeup in the truck that resembles a war rig. Yes, I think that is actually pretty awesome. Also feels very reminiscent of the Pinky and the Brain spinoff, especially with how Brain is presented as more likable compared to the human antagonist he contends with, the Elon Musk illusion, who I know you loved, Mark. Loves the outfits that the mice sport in this, the Brain's Hunter S. Thompson cosplay and the yoga clothes are great looks. So there's another opinion, Mark.
Which is even fine. That's absolutely fine. You know, people, as we learned when we asked for comments this week, people are entitled to their opinions.
Yes. Some people were a little more verbose about what they didn't like about Making the Brain reboot, and not just the episodes we were talking about, or the Animaniacs reboot, not just the episodes we asked for, the, you know, in general, then that's not what we asked for. But it's be like us and be constructive about it, and be like Boycast and be constructive about it. He finishes and says, I don't know if this is a coincidence that you two chose Woodstock Slappy and Mad Mess Fury Road because they feature funny rodents riffing on a popular festival, but it seems like serendipity that you covered both shorts. Yeah, Mark, you tried, right?
I did, because Hulu said that they go to a music festival. So I was thinking, oh, cool, more music jokes. Then it wasn't. But Pinky the Brain at Burning Man is also a pretty good, plot. So, you know, I was going to my past.
Burning Man is a music festival in the same way that, like, soup is technically a drink. Like, yes, it fulfills the same concept as that, but I wouldn't exactly be having some on a cold day right out the jug.
We also have a comment here from another fellow podcast, the Pemmy and James Pod. They said, in regards to Woodstock Slappy, with much of its humor being aimed at parents, feels like an outlier in the celebrity parody subgenre of war animation. I doubt many 10-year-olds at the time would have recognized Melanie. I only did after seeing the song being parodied here while watching VH1 or Country Joe.
No kids listen to Country Joe and the Fish.
No, but all the kids understood Canned Heat.
Yeah. You know, that's what all the kids are listening to, you know. Oh, yay! Yay!
It's great parody work, but was it material like this that caused network execs to get trigger happy with all the "kids won't get this" notes the series constantly received?
Who cares? It's a cartoon. We were making it for kids. We were making it for ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's what they should have done while they're making it Animaniacs. Like, just in the meeting, they're like, okay, so why is there a Melanie reference in here? Are they not going to get it? Just go, okay, don't worry. They hit a button, Frizz Freely gets pushed out, they're making it for themselves! Oh, okay.
I'm going to say my one line, which I say very well, and very coherently, actually. Tonight, in concert, Frizz Freeling and Country Joe, and the guy from Can't Heat. They are making it for themselves!
So thank you, Pointcast and Pemmy and James, for your comments this week.
Oh boy. Before we get to what we're doing next week, we just want to take this opportunity to thank the people that have subscribed to our Patreon. People such as TriScrew, Andrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the guy, not the drink. They have helped us out by pledging anywhere from $1 to $5 on our Patreon. And they get perks like being thanked in the middle of an episode, in addition to their commentaries that they get that we record, as well as early access to episodes and handwritten letters from me, and also playbacks of live streams. So if you want to become a patron just like those four that I thanked in the middle of this episode, you can follow our patron at patreon.com/TNQAF.
Jordan, I'm pissed off. Is there anything we can cover next week that will make me not so mad?
I don't know. What's your feelings on Wacko's Wish?
Oh, I fucking love that. I love that movie as a kid.
Then we're going to do that. Next week, we're doing a movie episode. And we are doing the Animaniacs direct-to-video Christmas, if not Christmassy, then very festive Wacko's Wish, which ran its fair share of times on Cartoon Network when I was a kid, so I've seen it a ton of times.
Oh, it ran every December. It ran every December Cartoon Network. Dude, there was a point in time, right? Right when Animaniacs left Nicktoons to right before they get back on the hub, where the only way I could watch Animaniacs was when Cartoon Network aired Wacko's Wish. It was weird. It was like the only time they would ever air Animaniacs would be like at like 9 in the morning or in December. It's like, oh shit, Animaniacs. It's great, though. Yeah. It is. It's a really fun movie. and we'll have plenty to say about it.
So that's the end of this week's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at TallGushMap.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post clips from bits and shorter bits as well. So follow us on that. We also have a TikTok for some reason. If you're into that, follow us on that. Also, follow our Patreon.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And Hulu released this episode 3 years before its expiry date as well. So blame them for this as well. Good night.